Good evening, everyone across the country. This is Tim Phillips. I am president of Americans for Prosperity. Thank you so much for joining us this teletown hall on the issue of healthcare. No issue more vital as we fight through this pandemic, try to get the economy open again, try to get schools open again, try to get back our lives, our country moving again, and do it in a responsible way. I am joined by Sally Pipes. She is the head of the Pacific Research Institute, one of the foremost think tanks in the entire nation. Sally, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This topic, given all that we've gone through over the last year, I think the biggest question I have for you starting off this teletown hall, and again, for many of you joining, I'm Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. Sally Pipes, what is it that we learned? What are some of the best lessons that we learned from the pandemic on the healthcare front that we can use, hopefully, to make our nation stronger and to help individual healthcare moving forward as we push through this pandemic?
Well, thank you, Tim. I think the pandemic has really revealed the importance of market-based solutions to this crisis. And it showed many negative aspects of relying on bureaucrats and government officials for solutions both at the federal and at the state level. There was a lot of divergent opinion among bureaucrats. We remember wearing masks, not wearing masks. Some are supporting wearing double masks. Is everything okay? Regulations have been a stumbling block to the fast rollout of national testing. The FDA was so slow in approving tests that were manufactured by the private sector. They turned to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They finally rolled out a test, and it proved to be inaccurate. So it's just another example of poor government service. But fortunately, the federal government allowed the private sector to rapidly develop vaccines and the antivirals. The FDA assisted the drug companies so that they could move quickly through the approval process. Emergency use authorization was given to Gilead's remdesivir for those in hospital, the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines, and now, just most recently, Johnson & Johnson's one-dose vaccine. The FDA needs to stop delaying the emergency use authorization of the AstraZeneca vaccine. It's proved to be very highly effective in the UK. It's interesting, the Moderna vaccine went to clinical trial in a record 69 days because the FDA, I don't think this has ever happened before, let companies move through three phases of trials at one time rather than one after the other. We had emergency use authorization for Pfizer and Moderna within 9 months. This process under normal circumstances could take up to 6 years. So this was really a great thing to keep in mind for going forward. The federal government's Operation Warp Speed did partner with the drug companies, and it was very good news, and I hope this will continue. They didn't hold hearings on drug prices, nor did they block the FDA's fast approval process. And interestingly, Pfizer did not take any government money, but a lot of the other drug companies are helping with the rollout. Merck is helping J&J with the manufacturing. Sanofi and Novartis are helping help with Pfizer. The market was allowed to work. One problem we've seen has been the distribution of the vaccines, which has been in the hands of government. The government had many technical issues with distribution, but good news, 2 million Americans are getting vaccinated every day. We need less central control and give more power to individuals and private companies. West Virginia has had a very successful vaccination program. So we've seen the hospitalizations, cases, and deaths go down, and I'm hoping that the economy is going to turn around quickly when we get the lockdowns ending. People need to get back to work. We need schools reopening. So I feel that the federal, state, and county government responses to COVID on balance contributed to many problems with distribution and administration of vaccines. So we need faster FDA approval, no price controls on drugs going forward, no long-run hearings, and we need to keep the market open for innovation in the pharmaceutical sector.
No, I think that's exactly right. And ladies and gentlemen, across the country, we've got several thousand folks joining us now. I'm Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. You were just listening to Sally Pipes, who heads up the Pacific Research Institute, one of the foremost conservative or free market, really, think tanks in the entire world. We're glad to have her. Also, we've just been joined by Congressman Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. Congressman, thank you for taking time out of it. I know it's a busy schedule on Capitol Hill, but this issue of health care, you are one of the leaders in Congress on this. Give us a sense. Sally was just walking us through some of the good, the bad, and the ugly with the FDA drug development, with the vaccine development, some of the missteps by the government, some of the things that maybe they got right. Give us a sense in your from your experience and what you've seen of what we got right and what we got wrong as this pandemic rolled out on the healthcare front.
Well, thanks, Sam. Great to join Sally and so many great Americans across the country who, like us, believe in freedom and liberty and getting the government out of our way so that we can do what's in the best interest of our families. And that is actually the answer, right? I mean, if we look about what went wrong, what was right, the biggest thing that went wrong was that the government interrupted or interfered with the lives of the American people and interfered with businesses, interfered with the ability of people to take care of their own families and manage their own communities, lives, businesses, et cetera. And the consequences of that have been disastrous. The lockdowns have proved to be disastrous worldwide, but particularly in America. They did nothing to actually save lives and, frankly, made things worse with respect to mental health issues, lack of access to cancer screenings, the impact, obviously, on other health issues as well as suicide rates. When people's businesses are shutting down and loss of livelihoods and all of these things, these consequences that we'll see over time playing out, that is by far, history will judge this very harshly in terms of having a, almost $20 trillion economy getting ground down to a halt and what that means for the world. You know, the 150 billion people who are going to be starving or lacking food because the American system shut down, et cetera, and then the impact on our country. I think that's the biggest thing. Now, on the more positive side, you know, we saw what happens when, because of you responding to a crisis, you then realize that some of the regulations you had in place were stupid and unnecessary in the first place. And so you got massive expansion with telemedicine. You've got changes in the regulatory state and the FDA process, which I think Sally just addressed at least some of those. And so you saw what happens when you unleash the market and get the government the hell out of the way and its ability to respond, its ability to produce. And I think if we can take that lesson and then marry that with a strong admonition to never shut down our whole way of life and society again, then we will be the better for it in the future.
No, that is such an important point, Congressman Chip Roy. These whole set, folks talk about following the science, and we want to do that. That's the way, one key way to save lives. It feels to me in a lot of cases, though, it's been following ideology rather than actually following the science. When I think about the results in Florida, I was in Florida a week and a half ago with our AFP teams near Naples and also near Boca Raton and up toward Orlando. They've been open. California, New York, they've been, in a draconian fashion, shut down, locked down, freedoms crushed, frankly, for people. And when you look at hospitalization rates, when you look at death rates in those states compared to Florida, it's no better. In fact, New York is worse, despite Florida having an older population on the whole. So that does feel like that's been one of the great problems with this. Ladies and gentlemen on the call, several thousand of you have joined us now. Just press *3 if you would like to ask a question, *3. You'll go right to our folks that are helping with that. You can tell them who you are, where you're from, and we can get you into the queue for questions in just a few moments. It's toll-free, by the way, no charge to you, *3. Along with Sally Pipes from the Pacific Research Institute and Congressman Chip Roy from the great state of Texas, we also have Dean Clancy. Dean is our senior fellow for healthcare with Americans for Prosperity. And Dean, the question I want to ask you is very direct and to the point. What are the three or four things that we need to be doing moving forward to combat this pandemic, but also, frankly, to get American healthcare where it ought to be, serving our American folks?
Sure. Thanks, Tim. And it's great to be with you and Congressman Roy and Sally Pipes. Real honor to be with such great leaders. Our view at Americans for Prosperity is we need to save lives and save livelihoods. We need to get this economy open again in a way that minimizes harm to human life and health, but which actually lets people live their lives again. So we have a four-pronged strategy for doing that. It's vaccines, tests, therapeutics, and making those temporary waivers permanent. On vaccines, we need accelerated approval and deployment of the vaccines. We did a great job on accelerating the process of developing the vaccines, but FDA fell down on the job on approving them. You know, they took weekends off, they took the holidays off, they postponed the review of the data after it had been completed for weeks. That's really not excusable when people are dying. Second, tests. Americans need to know whether or not they're actually contagious in real time so that they can, you know, go out to a restaurant or to a business and be able to feel safe and secure. And the only way to do that, we've not had this at all throughout the entire pandemic. People have not been able to know whether they're actually contagious. We have the technology, simple, inexpensive home rapid tests that enable you to find out whether you're contagious without a doctor's prescription or supervision. It exists, but the FDA has not approved a test like that yet. We need to make those available so people can test frequently and know whether they're contagious. Third, therapeutics, you know, drugs and devices that help people who have the disease recover more quickly and shorten those hospital stays. And in this, the principle is simple. Let doctors and patients try to, you know, even existing remedies that were never thought of for this use. Let them try that without government interference. And by the way, let drug manufacturers and device makers share valid scientific data with prescribers about possible new uses of existing approved drugs. That's something the FDA doesn't allow now. It's a gag rule, and it's breaking the free flow of information that we need to save lives. Fourth, we need to take all those good temporary waivers that the government made last year and make them permanent. If that red tape had to be cut in order to save lives in a crisis, why would we reimpose that red tape going forward? So briefly again, we need a four-pronged strategy to save lives and save livelihoods, more vaccines, more tests, more therapeutics, and making those temporary waivers permanent.
Thank that, Dean, that's well said. Ladies and gentlemen, a number of you continue joining us across the country, several thousand folks. I'm Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. You're on our teletown hall on the important issue of healthcare as our nation is pushing through this pandemic, trying to get reopened this economy and the schools and frankly, moving forward, the steps we need to be taken to improve healthcare for Americans and steps we should not be taking, which brings me to my next question for Chip Roy, Congressman Chip Roy from Texas. Congressman, this $1.9 trillion spending boondoggle, the Biden-Schumer-Pelosi boondoggle, there's no other word for it. They call it COVID relief. It's not. It's less than 9% of it goes to that. It's an ideological wish list of liberal desires, many of which go back decades, that they want to do using the cover of this pandemic. I know that with regard to health care, this bill does a lot of bad on the health care front. I think on the Medicaid front, on insurance bailouts. Can you take a moment and tell the audience exactly how this bill, frankly, goes the wrong way on health care?
Sure, I'd be delighted to. And I want to echo a little bit what we were just talking about with respect to the regulatory repeal. I introduced legislation in the last Congress that we're going to reintroduce again. I think it's the Coronavirus Regulatory Repeal Act, which would basically say all of those regulations that we've been setting aside in order to get through the virus ought to be permanently set aside. And you know, Congress ought to have to act if they're going to renew them, basically. And I think we need that generally, but it certainly is fairly obvious where we've got things, whether, again, I mentioned telemedicine and I mentioned some of the FDA issues, et cetera. These are all things that we ought to just now leave permanent. So I would completely agree with my friend Dean on that point. On the $1.9 trillion monstrosity, I mean, where to begin, right? We could take an hour just beating up everything that's terrible in this bill. The things that aren't healthcare related, right? The sheer size of it being passed on top of $4 trillion already spent, of which $1 trillion was still left. This was all a political move by Democrats, a power play. It had nothing to do with the COVID virus, literally nothing, less than 9%, probably far less than that, truthfully, that was actually related to the virus. And the reality is they're using it to remake America. The Wall Street Journal had a great editorial on that this week, right, talking about increasing the social welfare state. It's all very purposeful. They're using it to expand the earned income tax credit. They're using it to increase child tax credits. They're using it, obviously, to give direct checks to people, direct checks to criminals. I can go through the list, but on the healthcare front, okay, again, back to establishing a social welfare state, they, for 2 years, basically expand Obamacare into essentially kind of a borderline public option. They're basically just throwing everything in the wind on healthcare. Under the ACA currently, as most listeners will know, people who earn 400% of the federal poverty level are not eligible for subsidies, meaning a single person who earns more than $51K is not eligible for these subsidies, the federal dollars, nor is the family three at $87,000. This bill eliminates the income cap that limits who's eligible, and it would also limit the amount households pay to only 8.5% of their income. So this would boost subsidies to lower-income consumers. And the subsidy changes would be temporary and expire after 2 years, but it's very purposeful and mean more government dependence for almost 14 million people. Their expanded tax credits would increase federal deficits by, I think, $34 billion over 10 years. That's all made-up numbers. CBO just makes it up, but it's a lot of money. And guess what? The hospital industry and insurers support the move. Now, why is that? Because our entire healthcare system is corrupt. It's all about fat cats. It's all about insurance companies. It's all about government. That's why we, you know, support freedom, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and getting insurance bureaucrats and government bureaucrats out of the way. It also expands Medicaid. The package includes funding to, you know, entice states that didn't expand their Medicaid programs before, like Texas. I worked for Governor Perry when we fought that. The federal government would, for 2 years, increase its matching funds to cover both existing Medicaid enrollees and the full cost of expanding, up from the 90% coverage. This is all designed on purpose. And then the Senate language subsidizes 100% of COBRA for 18 months. The insurance companies are out sitting back, fat cats, patting themselves on the back, watching their stock go up while the government borrows money to mortgage our children's future to subsidize the expansion of government at the expense of liberty, you know, basically writing our own, tombstone language. And meanwhile, they're all getting enriched in the process because it's corporate cronyism at its worst. I could go on and on and on. The bill is a disaster. Anybody who voted for it should be not just sent out on their ear in the election, but they should be completely chastised every day they're in office until they are thrown out.
Yeah. Congressman Roy, I tell you, I will applaud the Republicans in the United States Senate and the Republicans in the United States House. Every one of them voted against this boondoggle, and good for them. And I mean that not as a partisan comment, but just as a statement. Good for them for recognizing what you just said. This is one of the most outrageous, horrific bills in modern American history, with some of the spending abuses and cronyism and waste and frankly the fraud and abuse in this legislation. If I'm not mistaken, I believe there were two courageous Democrats in the House of Representatives. I believe I'm right in this, Congressman, who voted no as well. And I think I'm right in that. Good for them, too. And I respect that so much. But what a terrible, terrible bill. Sally Pipes, along with this horrific legislation that just passed, the president's going to sign it, we also have what's called a public option legislation. Several liberal senators have now put forward this legislation, which is a dramatic expansion of Obamacare, frankly, well beyond that. Could you take a moment and tell us how this public option that many folks on the call have probably heard about, it's now proposed legislation, what that public option means as far as government having greater and greater control over our health care?
Right. Thank you, Tim. And thank you so much, Congressman Roy and Dean, for your excellent remarks. This all sort of feeds into what I'm just going to talk about. The public option, which is a government insurance plan that would compete against private insurers. And the ultimate thing is the public option will crowd out private insurance and leave Bernie Sanders and his team just in the wings waiting for single-payer health care, Medicare for all, i.e. outlawing all private insurance in this country. Remember during when Biden was running against Bernie for the nomination, Biden said, well, I'm not for single payer. I want people to be able to have their own insurance. His public option plan is really just, as I say, a stepping stone approach to single payer. And I'm Canadian. I grew up under single payer. I've done a lot of work on it. And it really would be a total disaster for the American people. So AFP needs to educate everyone they know on why single payer would be a bad idea. And I'll talk about that. But yes, you're right. For the third time, Senators Tim Kaine from Virginia and Michael Bennett from Colorado have introduced their public option again. It's called the Medicare X Choice Act, and it would set up a Medicare public option for individuals and small businesses. First, they start up slowly in areas with rural areas with few insurers, but it would go nationwide by 2025. And it would be included in a future, they say, government budget reconciliation bill, requiring only a simple majority. But of course, some of these things may not pass the parliamentarian. But it's for sure that progressives like Sanders, AOC, Jayapal, they aren't going to support it. They truly want single payer. But this the bill from Bennett and Kaine, the public option, includes an expansion of subsidies, just like Congressman Roy talked about. People would not pay more than 8.5% of their income on premiums. Currently, under the Affordable Care Act, that percentage is 10%. It would eliminate the subsidy cap for people earning over 400% of the federal poverty level. They don't include reducing the Medicare age of eligibility from 65 down to 60, which, of course, Biden has talked about in his plan, which would add 23 million people to Medicare. And it would cost $100 million a year. And Medicare Part A is already on the verge of going bankrupt. This would be a catastrophe, but they don't have that in there. But Biden approves it. It would also include allowing prescription drug negotiations through Part D, which of course Pelosi has talked about. We just don't want that. You know, the thing is that doctors would be paid rates that they're paid by Medicare. This is going to have a tremendous impact on, you know, a lot of doctors retired from medicine early under Obamacare because of all of the paperwork, electronic health records, all of this. I think more doctors would quit early if this legislation passed. And also, the best and brightest kids are not going to go into medicine if they think they're going to be civil servants and not be able to get, you know, to do the kind of medicine that they're trained for. This is what happens in Canada. The best docs get paid the same as the worst docs. Their doctors become union members, and we do not want this to happen in this country. The single payer, which means, as I say, no private coverage at all, there would be in this country long waits for care, ration care, doctor shortages, and higher taxes. Bernie Sanders and they all get up on the podium saying Canadian health care is free. It isn't free. The average Canadian family pays $14,474 a year in hidden taxes to pay for a system where the average wait last year from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist, 22.6 weeks. That's over 5 months. And so, you know, these are things that the American people need to know, because my mom, you know, when I moved to the U.S., she said, I hope you're not becoming an impatient American. Canadians and Brits are they're very peaceful. They're very patient people. Americans are not. And so, you know, long waits, ration care, even the Congressional Budget Office came out in their report at the end of December and said, if we get single payer in this country, it will lead to ration care and long waits. And going back to the pandemic, of course, you know, in Canada and Great Britain, in Britain, under their National Health Service, they have over 4.5 million people are on a waiting list to get treatments and surgeries because they couldn't get them under the pandemic because all the hospital beds were taken up. Tremendous negative impact on cancer diagnosis, cancer treatments, and it's the same thing in Canada. So we want to keep our healthcare system open. The public option that Bennett and Kane are pushing, the public option that Biden wants, would be a disaster for all Americans.
Terrible. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, Sally, you made some great points on that. Does your website at Pacific Research, is there a website folks can go to on this call? A lot of folks are on the call. They're I'm sure they'd like to know even more about, hey, this public option, we know it's bad, but here's some of the bullet points on it. Do you have something that you could send them to? I mean, a website you could send them to?
Yes, absolutely. It's www.pacificresearch, all one word, .org. And if you go to the media section, healthcare, all of my, you know, my weekly Fox op-ed, my biweekly Forbes, Washington Examiner, all these things are there about Biden care, okay, public option, single payer. Yep.
PacificResearch.org, ladies and gentlemen, on the call. Okay. We have depressed you, I know, ladies and gentlemen. We've talked about the failures of the federal government here in many ways. We've talked about the horrific pork and misguided cronyism in this $1.9 trillion Biden, Pelosi, Schumer boondoggle. You heard about that from Congressman Chip Roy. You heard Sally Pipes from the Pacific Research Institute talking about just how horrific for healthcare, for Americans individually, this public option will be, which has now been proposed and put into legislation by a number of legislators on the left. We want to give you a glimmer of some good ideas, though, some good things that are happening. And that's something called the personal option, a healthcare approach that takes not this top-down government, perfect approach that the public option does and all the spending in that bill. Dean Clancy, a senior healthcare expert at Americans for Prosperity, give us a sense, if you would, in a good fashion of what this personal option does, what it means for Americans, if we can get Congress and the political leaders to go in this direction.
Sure. Thanks, Tim. A personal option is the opposite of a public option or a government option. It's not a complete government takeover of healthcare as the other side wants. Instead, it's a set of smart, sensible reforms that lower costs and increase access while keeping you, the patient, at the center of your care. The personal option really means the control you deserve, the access you want, and the affordability you need. It's a set of reforms, as I said, and I'll mention a few of them here. First, let's expand tax-free health savings accounts, which can help make healthcare more affordable by saving you anywhere from 10 to 40% off every expense. That's right, health savings accounts make healthcare more affordable for you. Most Americans have no access to an HSA, but leaders in Congress, like Congressman Roy, are trying to change that, and that's at the top of our list for a personal option. Second, we think you should know exactly what your care is going to cost before you get it. We need price transparency. You should know in advance what it's going to cost, just like when you go into the grocery store or a restaurant. Third, we've got to give you more choices. We got to remove the rigid and senseless barriers that stop people from accessing the doctors and the nurses and the facilities they need. So, for example, we do need to remove barriers to telehealth so that patients can see their caregivers safely and conveniently from the comfort of their home, and they can have their vital signs monitored through the internet confidentially and privately by their doctor without the inconvenience of having to make a doctor's office visit all the time. That should be allowed. Why isn't it? Because government bureaucracies and insurance company bureaucracies are worried that people will somehow abuse their freedom. But we don't believe that. We believe in people, and we think you should have telehealth. This is the 21st century. Another thing, nurses and physician assistants and others should be able to practice to the full extent of how they're licensed and trained without having to ask a doctor's permission. That would really help in rural areas and underserved urban communities. Another thing, hospitals should be allowed to add new beds and new machines without having to ask some government board for permission. You shouldn't need a government permission slip or a political connection to provide a new medical service or purchase equipment or build a new facility. Alternatives to insurance should be more available. For example, short-term health plans. These plans are 50 to 80% less expensive on average than a traditional plan. They're like a Toyota Camry for people who don't need and can't afford a Maserati. That's the right people should have. Unfortunately, the Biden administration has declared war on short-term plans. They want to get rid of them. We're going to try to fight that. Another idea, direct primary care. Any patient should be allowed to pay a flat fee for unlimited access to a primary care doctor and preventive services. You know, like a Netflix subscription, you cut out the insurance company middleman, you get the care you need when you need it at a price you can afford. And finally, prescription drug prices. We need to get them down. Government price controls, as Sally has been pointing out, lead to healthcare rationing. And the key to lower prices is by approving more generics and recognizing drugs approved overseas in other advanced nations that we trust. If it's approved as safe overseas, why not do that automatically here in America instead of making people wait and die while waiting? So these are just a few examples of the policies that we call a personal option. It really means giving you the choice and control you want, access to the medical professionals you trust at a price you can afford.
Yeah, and Dean, could you, that last sentence you said about the three things it does, could you repeat that for folks one more time? Because I tell you, you know, the way we talk about it matters. And the way you just finished that statement, could you go back and just, if you can remember, just say that again, the key things you just said on this personal option, because that sums it up what we're talking about.
The personal option means giving you the choice and control you want, access to the medical professionals you trust, at a price you can afford.
Yeah, that, ladies and gentlemen, that is how we ought to be talking about healthcare. And also, we ought to be pointing out the horrific excesses and wrongheaded moves that are just top down from Washington, D.C., from these politicians that keep wanting to bail out insurance companies like Chip Roy was talking about, Congressman Roy, or ration healthcare like Sally Pipes from the Pacific Research Institute was talking about. If you want to know more about the personal option that Dean Clancy was just detailing, just go to apersonaloption.com, apersonaloption.com, and it'll give you all the details succinctly, directly to the point on this. Now, Congressman Chip Roy, you've actually, if I understand this correctly, have already introduced elements of this personal option, specifically these health savings accounts. Can you take a minute and tell folks why we need these and what your legislation does to improve health care, specifically on this personal option with health savings accounts?
Well, Dean just did an excellent job of outlining what y'all call or what he calls the personal option. I introduced first a bill called the Healthcare Freedom Act, which is what I campaigned on in 2018. And I still talk about healthcare freedom because I think it's an important and powerful narrative. But through a lot of the joint efforts and working with, you know, y'all, with some other folks in town, talking to a lot of people who've got a lot of good polling research, we settled in on the personalized care being a good narrative. So Senator Cruz in the Senate and I in the House introduced the Personalized Care Act, which includes a significant number of the elements of what Dean just described, in fact, almost all of it really in practice. And the guts of it, of course, is the massively expanded health savings accounts. And when I say massively expanded, I say we significantly raise the caps, significantly change how health savings accounts can be used, what they can be used for. And in doing that, we allow individuals to then have control to be able to use it for, as Dean outlined, things like direct primary care, to be able to use it for insurance, to be able to use it for health sharing ministries, the ability to defray costs in the market. And you can use it as you see fit, carrying it from job to job across your life, which essentially eliminates or mostly eliminates the whole issue of pre-existing conditions, right, which is a product of employer-provided insurance. And we're not against employers, choosing to provide subsidies or provide additional support for healthcare. What we oppose, or maybe I should say differently, what we think we ought to change is the extent to which people are kind of trapped in insurance that is managing their healthcare and being funded by employers rather than empowering people to be able to have access to care funded themselves, funded by their employers, funded through charitable, entities or whatever, and being able to go out into the market and go buy that from direct primary care, et cetera, and then have insurance as a backstop that they have. You know, it's odd that you would have automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, renters insurance, life insurance that you have personally, that you go out in the marketplace and shop for, and it's actual insurance, right? It's a financial instrument rather than your automobile insurance doesn't manage the care of your car for the most part. It's if you wreck it or if you hurt someone. Life insurance, same thing. Homeowners, right? You don't have homeowners insurance to take care of, I want a new paint job, or we got to figure out how to fix a broken window or whatever. It's for a catastrophic fire or, like we just experienced in Texas. This is the whole point. We need to radically reform the way we talk about healthcare. And Dean, of course, closed out with the right framing. But I want to actually up the ante just a little bit to say that we freedom lovers need to be much more aggressive at planting the flag on the shining city on a hill for healthcare, in which we demand that conservatives and free market supporters and Republicans, and Democrats, if they're willing to listen, go and reach for something much bigger and greater than all that we've been talking about for the better part of 30 years in healthcare is coverage. And coverage for insurance bureaucrats or coverage through government programs is not healthcare. That's why, and I know I'm saying a lot of things that many of us have talked about before, but the model that we're talking about, this bill, is the engine of a new transformative approach to healthcare that we can own as Republicans and be on our conservatives, let me say here as a nonpartisan matter, and drive forward with a concrete, confident agenda. And my goal in heading the Republican Study Committee Healthcare Task Force and working with my colleagues, working with Senator Cruz in the Senate, working with y'all, working with other groups, Heritage and the consensus groups and others, and there's a lot of differing views on this stuff. I'm trying to drive all of that narrative towards this idea of personalized care, with this is the engine, and then we kind of work around that to make sure that we're not getting trapped in what we've been doing, which is responding to Democrats, and it was responding to Hillary Care, responding to Obamacare, responding to the pre-existing condition trap. And I'll end with that. I'm a cancer survivor. I went through Hodgkin's lymphoma. I've got a law degree, a finance degree, and an information systems degree, and I couldn't understand the damn bills. And, if you're a single mom with two jobs and you're trying to figure it out, you can't understand these bills, that's part of the problem. The reason you can't understand them is because you're not having to go shop for them. Transparency is a product of a corrupt system propped up by government in which insurance companies are being empowered by regulation to run your health care. Why should I call some kid in Omaha, Nebraska, I've never met, to tell me who's in my plan, who's in my network, which three doctors in a 100-mile radius can I see, and what my deductible is, and it's $10,000 or whatever it is, and I'm all restricted, when I can go get my oil changed from 50 different companies within a 10-mile radius of my house? It's just absurd. We have to turn this on its head and get people focused on the right thing to get prices down and access to doctors up, instead of letting these bureaucrats, both insurance and government, run our health care.
Yeah, Congressman Chip Roy, ladies and gentlemen, that's who you're listening to, and he is exactly right. We've played defense, not just for years, but for decades, all the way back to Hillary Care. And we've got to take back this idea of compassion. It's not compassionate to have government ration care, to have government make people wait 4 or 5 months for basic care. Like folks like my mom, who's 85, or folks like Americans across this country, that's not compassion. It's not compassion to lock people in to substandard Medicaid Medicaid that does not take care of them and that puts them into a horrific situation, many times them and their families, and often the most vulnerable Americans. That's not compassion. Compassion is the kind of proposals and ideas that Congressman Chip Roy just laid out in the health savings accounts and the other efforts that he's putting forward. It's what Dean Clancy is talking about. If you want to learn more about this personal option, go to apersonaloption.com, apersonaloption.com, and you can educate yourself on it and, frankly, begin advocating for this. Jeff, let's go ahead and do, we have a question from the audience. Let's do a question from the audience for our panel.
Tim, we got a couple questions. I don't know. Hopefully we'll have time to get to them, to all of them, but the first one's a pretty good one. It's Roman in Illinois just asked, how can we get a personal option in front of my members of Congress? Like, how can I persuade them to adopt policies like these?
Yeah. Congressman Roy, you want to talk about that for a minute?
Oh, sure. Sorry. I had it on mute. I had to hit the button. Here's what I would suggest. We have made great strides in the last 2 years, I would say, because of the great work of AFP, the great work of a few other organizations out there. I won't necessarily plug them all because it's an AFP deal. But there's a few folks who get it, right? And several of them are on this call. We have now made strides so that the Republican Study Committee has adopted at the core of what we're doing the engine that I just described and that Dean described better than I did. And so what we need is every member of Congress, you know, obviously particularly on the right side of the spectrum, to hear that this is what the American people want and to encourage them to be confident and not hide on this issue and say, we don't need you to come forward with a bunch of complex bills. I don't want to hear about donut holes and what we're doing about reimbursement rates for Medicaid, all these different things that Republicans tend to get all trapped in. I want you to go out there and fight for me. I'm speaking as an American, not as a congressman. Go out and fight for me and embrace, and then list those off. Embrace the Personalized Care Act. Embrace some other good bills that are out there for direct primary care and telehealth that's out there and telemedicine. Things that are innovative, things that embrace technology. Things that break the mold in the back of the current crony system that is, frankly, in my view, totally un-American in restricting our right to go get to the doctor of our choice. I mean, again, that's a different thing. You've got a right to health care. I'm saying in a free society, I ought to be able to go into the open market and go get health care. I can't right now because so many good doctors are constricted and constrained because of regulation or because we've allowed crony insurance companies to micromanage or overmanage them, going all the way back to legislation way back before Obamacare, right? Obamacare is bad, but I don't worry about focusing on Obamacare repeal as much anymore because now we have the entire alphabet soup of government regulation that's destroying innovation and market competition in healthcare. UMRA, HIPAA, EMTALA, go down the list, right? The laundry list of regulations. Going back to the, you know, even the, what is it, the HMO or whatever it is, the Act of 72, all of those things and Medicare and Medicaid that have all constrained the system. That was a long answer. Tell your members of Congress, you want personalized care, you want it now, you want Republicans to go on offense, conservatives go on offense.
Yeah, and by the way, you can do what Congressman Chip Roy is talking about by going to apersonaloption.com, apersonaloption.com. There's a click or a link right there you can click on. It'll easily, it takes about maybe a minute and a half at most, probably less, and you can actually make your voice heard on this issue to get on offense to your member of Congress, to tell them to do the right thing. So I hope you'll do that. Jeff, let's do one more question, then we'll wrap it up for the evening in just a moment.
Sure. Here's a good one from Whitney in Missouri. And she's asking, you know, I've heard my high-deductible HSA plan may be considered a quote-unquote junk plan, but I really like it because I don't frequent a doctor and it allows me to save money tax-free. How can I protect my HSA and high deductible plan?
Sally Pipes, you want to? Can you or either Dean handle that, either one of you?
Yeah. Well, I'll try and then Dean can follow up. I mean, HSAs are now so popular and so many corporations now even offer HSAs. So I think it would be very hard to take HSAs away from people. I would even like to see people on Medicare, people 65 and older, if they're on Medicare, they should be able to have an HSA too, because it puts patients in charge of their health care, and you can shop around and get the best deal. And that's why the personal option is so important. So HSAs, we need to even build the cap, make it even easier, and you can, so you can put more money in, like in your IRA. And you need, we need to allow people to use their HSA to help pay their premiums if their premiums are too high. So it is one of the best parts of reforming healthcare, to putting doctors and patients in charge that I know of. So I just think there are too many people that have it now. It would be just a nightmare for people if it were taken away.
Yeah,
Sally,
I think that makes good sense, Sally. Dean, go ahead.
Well, just going to say, yes, a lot of people have them, but 9 in 10 Americans are not allowed effectively to have one. That's why Congressman Roy's bill is so important, because it would allow every American to have one. And by the way, HSAs are great for people with chronic conditions like diabetics, because you can pay for insulin and supplies with a huge discount thanks to the way it works. Some people say, well, HSAs just favor rich people. But it's not true. It helps people with chronic conditions. And if we want, we could, take some of the money we're currently spending on health care through the government and put it in people's accounts so that lower-income people could spend for health care out of pocket just like everybody else.
And I love my HSA. I love my HSA, and I am far from rich working in the business that we're in. So I absolutely love it.
That's right. Well, each of these panels, each of these folks tonight, let's do a kind of a parting thought, if you would. We'll start with Congressman Chip Roy from Texas, but just maybe a last 60 seconds or so on the parting thought, the dominant thought you have as you wrap up tonight moving forward. Congressman?
I would just say, number one, do not despair at the frustration you feel about what we're getting thrown at us from the Democrats. They are, in my opinion, overplaying their hand. It will create significant damage, but we will fight that back, and I hope it will cause a massive pendulum swing back towards freedom and economic growth and prosperity that we desperately need going forward for our kids and grandkids. And on that note, what I would tell you is, Republicans need to understand, and they understand that best when their constituents and activists tell them this, that this is a winning issue. The polls show that. The language Dean outlined, it's poll tested. We know. We've been working on it. It works. In fact, if the Trump administration had embraced this more fully about a year ago, as some of us were pushing, and be on offense on healthcare, polls show them that what we looked at is it would move numbers a good 6 points in our direction instead of being on defense. So tell your people, be on offense, embrace personalized care, empower people, empower doctors, and take power away from the government insurance bureaucrats. And you can do that the way AFP is talking about and through the Personalized Care Act and a few other options. Thank you all for joining.
Well said, Congressman Chip Roy from Texas. Sally, kind of a parting thought for about 60 seconds or so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the personal option, these are things that I've been pushing for since I came to America in 1991 to escape Medicare for all. So I think it's so important that these town halls, radio interviews, op-eds, we have to educate the American people on the positive things, as Congressman Roy just said. If we get the public option and then we get Medicare for all, we will be, as Hayek said, on the road to serfdom. There will be no off-ramp, because once you get a government program in place, very, very hard to get rid of. As my friend P.J. O'Rourke says, if you think healthcare is expensive now, just wait until it's free. Thanks so much, Tim.
Well said, Sally. That is exactly right. As usual, P.J. O'Rourke was dead on right. Dean Clancy with Americans for Prosperity, your parting thoughts for about 60 seconds or so.
Sure, Tim. I'll just end with one question. Who do you trust with your health care? The government or your own doctor?
Well
said.
That is exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Dean. Well said and succinct, I tell you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a big moment for the nation. Washington, D.C., the threat level coming out of there is the highest, frankly, I've seen in many, many years. I love what Congressman Chip Roy says. Let's not despair. Let's keep working, keep fighting for a better future for folks in this country, for everyone. We're going to do that at Americans for Prosperity on this issue of health care, protecting freedom, hopefully bringing more prosperity and better lives and knocking down these barriers that are holding people back from the American dream. I'm Tim Phillips, president of Americans for Prosperity. Thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.